Welcome to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. I'm your host, Amir Ali. The topic of today's show is Why Can't I Get Pregnant? The story of Juana McKibben, with fertility advice from reproductive and fertility specialist Dr. Serena Chen. You don't want to miss this. But hey, before you do anything, make sure you subscribe and share this episode with a friend. God bless you, everyone. What's up, world? Welcome to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. I'm your host, Amir Ali. I'm an opinionated fat boy from the west side of Detroit. I was groomed in Chicago and shaped in New York, but in my heart, Paris is home. Join me on my quest to get answers and gain clarity on a plethora of controversial topics, current events, and political issues. It's a lot going on in the world that I want to discuss, so please take a listen and tell me your thoughts.
Tell me what's your thoughts on.
One of the most magnificent things about a woman, besides their beauty, is the fact that they are the creators of all living things. Everything created in the world was created by a woman. So when a woman has problems conceiving, this can be heartbreaking and extremely disappointing. About 9% of men and 11% of women of reproductive age in the United States have experienced fertility problems. In 1/3 of infertile couples, the problem is with the man, and in 1/3 of infertile couples, the problem can't be identified or is with both the man and the woman. I had the pleasure of speaking with Juana McKibben, and she shared with me her family's struggle with infertility. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Juana McKibben to the show. Thank you for coming today, Juana.
Thank you for having me.
You're married, correct, Juana?
Yes, I am.
And how long have you been married?
We got married December 24th of 2005, so we just made 16 years.
When you first got married to your husband, did you guys talk about kids prior to being married?
Yes, we've always wanted children from the very beginning, from when we got married, and we both wanted children.
Did you start immediately or did you wait some time before you guys tried for kids?
Well, we never were on anything like birth control or anything like that, even when we were dating. So I guess from the very beginning, we were trying to get pregnant.
When did you notice that you weren't getting pregnant?
I noticed within the first 6 months to a year, because when you read about infertility, they say, I believe the definition is like the inability to conceive after 6 months of unprotected sex.
Okay.
So after I was reading it, I was like, something might be going on. I was talking to my husband about it. We both knew we wanted children, so we just kept trying.
At what point were you like, hey, you know, we've been having sex for a while, but I'm not pregnant?
I think it was just unsaid. Like, we never actually flat out said, like, okay, we're not getting pregnant. What's going on? It was just kind of like hoping. And then when it didn't happen, being devastated. Kind of like okay. That. We never actually talked about it until we started talking about getting help.
How long had you guys been trying where you actually had that conversation about getting help?
It was around 2010. That was when I first went to a fertility. No, first I went to my primary care, OBGYN, talking to her about it.
Well, what did you say to your doctor? When you went to go see your doctor, what was the conversation to her about?
The conversation was basically, we've been trying to get pregnant and it's not happening. And I'm not sure why.
Okay.
And I didn't know if it was because I had maybe some underlying issues or anything like that. I do have lupus.
Okay.
I didn't know if that was an issue with it. Like, maybe we weren't compatible genetically. I didn't know what was going on.
Okay. And so your doctor referred you to a specialist?
Yes. We went to Reproductive Biology Associates out here in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was Dr. Straub that I went to. And it was just a consultation at first.
What did the specialist say to you?
He told me that he needed to run some tests just to do the basic test to see if I could get pregnant, like basically making sure that my fallopian tubes were open, making sure that I was ovulating, just basically making sure that all of our reproductive tools were working, me and my husband. So he had to do a semen analysis, and then I had to do like different tests to make sure that everything was working appropriately.
Okay. And what was the outcome?
They told me that they thought one of my fallopian tubes were blocked. But I had to get surgery to get it unblocked. And then they said that they thought that due to scar tissue or something in my cervix, that maybe it wasn't working correctly. When everything works how it's supposed to, your body helps you get pregnant.
Yes.
And they thought that basically mine wasn't functioning like it should.
Okay. And what was the suggestion to rectify that?
What you would do to bypass that would be the intrauterine insemination. That way your cervix is not doing the work to get it to where it needs to be in the uterus. They put it directly in the uterus themselves.
Okay.
So your body doesn't have to do that part. And as far as giving you the pills to make you produce more eggs to give you a more viable chance of getting pregnant. So we tried that twice. That did not work.
Okay. They suggested that you try pills and try some artificial insemination?
It wasn't in vitro, because in vitro puts it directly into the uterus.
Okay.
And the IUI just puts it in the cervix and your body does the work. Like, because basically when you're doing it in vitro, they're putting a live baby inside of you. And okay. It's up to your body to take it in or to cultivate it and let it be a viable pregnancy. But with intrauterine insemination, you have a hope that you could get pregnant because they gave you pills that you have now 8 eggs. And they've put your husband's semen directly inside where you didn't have to go through any acid or any that would cause any type of hindrance for it to go where it needs to go. And then your body does the work for you. That's what it was supposed to do.
So you did that twice and that didn't work.
And it didn't work.
When that didn't work, what was the conversation like with your husband once you guys went home and it didn't work?
Mostly crying, like, why me? What's wrong with me? Why is it not working? You know, and then we were young, too, because I'm 37. We got married at 22.
Okay.
We were pretty young. We just couldn't understand what the issue was. They were saying that his count was low. It wasn't low, but they said it might have been too low to get me pregnant with all the stuff I had going on, too.
Okay.
Basically, where we were like, what we're going to do is we're going to sit back. We're not going to do the intrauterine stuff no more. We're going to do something that's more viable. We're going to try to do in vitro when we can afford it, because in vitro is very expensive. Even on the low end, it's like $10,000. And we didn't have insurance that would cover it. They would cover like some of my medications. I think they said it was $3,000 a month for the medication that you needed. When I went to Serving Massey Fertility Institute, they were doing in vitro fertilization for like $10,500. And that was the cheapest I had found.
Who suggested in vitro? Was that the doctor that suggested in vitro, or was that a suggestion that you made to the doctor?
They suggested it to us because basically they were saying it was basically impossible for us to get pregnant on our own. That's what they were saying. Well, they didn't say impossible, but they just gave me a very, very small chance that we could get pregnant naturally. Okay. And they said that the best option, if we wanted to be more aggressive as far as knowing that we're putting a live baby inside of me, it would be better for me to do in vitro. And that way I wouldn't be wasting money on stuff that may not work versus something that could possibly work.
What was the conversation with your husband when you said, hey, I think I want to do the in vitro, and knowing how much it cost?
We both knew the cost because I had got to the point where I was depressed. I had stopped really going to baby showers, really just putting a lot of blame on myself for why I wasn't getting pregnant. Maybe I should have waited before we had sex. We should have been married, you know, just all kinds of stuff that you tell yourself to why you're not getting pregnant and not really realizing that it's truly a medical condition.
Did he do the same thing?
I think because we were going through the process, he was educated on a lot of things because he was in the offices with us talking about the fertility, what it takes, how everything needs to be in alignment, and the steps it takes to become pregnant. Because it's not as easy as people think. You just think you have sex, you get pregnant. No, it has to be so many alignments for people to get pregnant. And I know it seems crazy when the people, you look around and you see people with 10 kids and it looked like all they do is just basically go to sleep and they're pregnant.
You blamed yourself, right? Did he blame himself as well?
Yes, we both had a conversation where he blamed himself. I would have issues where I would be late for like 6 weeks. I would be late for like a month. And I'm like, oh, yes, I know I'm pregnant this time. And then my period would come on and I would be devastated. Mm. And so he would see that cycle just go on and on and on for years and months. And I would blame myself. And then I would be thinking, instead of talking to him about it, I would always just internalize it and cry in the shower. I would think that I was disappointing him by not being able to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. But and then at the same time, once we actually had a conversation about it, he felt the same way. He felt like he was disappointing me because he wasn't able to give me what I wanted. So we both were in that same mindset.
Do you think that it had an effect on your marriage?
I think that it actually made us closer.
Okay.
It was hard. It almost felt like rejection, almost like we were being rejected from being parents.
Yes.
I think it made us closer because I'm the type of person, I'm very social. I'm a people person.
Yes.
So I'll put on a happy face when I'm destroyed inside, or I'll make somebody else feel great when I'm feeling like crap. He knew the real me.
Okay.
And that made us get closer. Like, so if I would be putting on the face like, oh, I'm fine, blah, 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 knowing that I just was late for 6 weeks thinking that we were pregnant and now my period came on abruptly, he would know that I'm destroyed inside. People don't understand, but they'll ask, why y'all ain't had no babies yet? Or, why you ain't got this yet? Or that? And they don't understand. We're trying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't understand that. But I would put on a happy face. And I think that made us get closer as a couple.
Well, that's good. You both talked about doing the in vitro.
Mm-hmm.
How much was it?
All together, the first cycle, this was with the cheaper route that we went with Serbian Nancy, unless I wanted to go out of state. If I wanted to go out of state, I think I found one in Alabama that was like $3,000.
Yeah.
When I went with Serbian Nancy, I looked up their ratings and everything, and they had a really good rating. And I did our consultation, and he basically was telling me how he could help us. So I think it came up to with the medications, the injections, his semen analysis, as well as the in vitro. I think it was like $15,000 or something for the first month.
Wow.
Should I say the first cycle? I'm not going to say the first month. You're supposed to start taking some type of injections to like hyperstimulate you. Also, too, the hyperstimulation stuff hurts your ovaries. I almost had an ovary rupture when we were trying to do the IUI because I had hyperstimulation. So it made me have way more eggs, like where somebody else might produce 3 eggs. I had like 10.
Mm.
So it caused like swelling and hurting of the ovaries. And they said when you take a lot of those pills, sometimes it can cause ovaries to rupture. So while you're trying to help it out, you can hurt yourself even worse.
The IVF was painful or the IUI was painful?
IUI was painful.
Okay.
I didn't do it. We never did IVF.
You didn't actually go through with the IVF. Why?
No.
You decided not to, or what happened?
We couldn't afford it. Like we were saving for it. And every time that we would save for it, something would come up that we would have to use the money that we were saving for that. So we were just kept saying, we're going to do it. And in 2017, I know we were saying we were saving up to do the in vitro. We basically said we weren't going to do any more fertility, anything until we had the money to pay for the in vitro. Because I didn't want to keep going through that cycle of getting my hopes up, getting let down.
Yeah.
When it wasn't something that wasn't an actual baby going inside of me.
You guys were saving. And then what happened?
I had started losing weight because I used to be 268 pounds, and I'm currently 160.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. What I said is I wanted to lose weight because I know they were telling me basically I needed to be in prime condition to have babies. And I couldn't understand that either when I would see obese women that were pregnant and stuff like that. But they were I just wanted to make sure that everything that I needed to be with my body would be optimum condition to have a baby. I decided to start losing weight, both me and my husband. I lost the majority of it into 2016, going to 2017.
Okay.
And then in 2017, I know I told my husband, I said, okay, well, now I think I'm at a good spot in my weight. We can go ahead and try to start saving. We were saving anyway, but really saving. Like, okay, we're going to do it this year. Yeah, like basically it's going to be this year. We're getting older. Let's go on and do it. My grandpa was my favorite person in the whole entire world. He had gotten sick where he had dementia real bad.
Sorry to hear that.
He ended up passing away August 1st.
Oh my gosh.
And I just couldn't understand why God would let him die. And I wasn't pregnant. I didn't have any children. How could he do that to me?
Mm-hmm.
So I was really devastated by that. So he died August 1st. We buried him August 8th. And I found out I was pregnant with my son, DJ, August 11th.
Okay.
It just happened. Like, I had been praying, I had been believing God, and, you know, I didn't really have a lot of hope because it had been 11 and a half years that we were married and we weren't pregnant, and we had been having sex unprotected from the time we got married, even before. And I didn't get pregnant, so I didn't have a lot of hope that it would happen. But at the same time, we had never stopped trying.
Yeah.
Once I got the positive test result, I'm like, no way.
What did that feel like?
It just felt like, honestly, I had taken so many pregnancy tests over my lifetime. It was just like, I know it's going to be negative. I don't even know why I'm playing. But I took it, and it was early morning. We were getting ready to go to work because we both worked at the same place. I told him that I bought a pregnancy test. He was like, why are you wasting money on a pregnancy test? Mm. I was spotting, but I wasn't spotting like I typically spot. And he was like, but you bleeding, so why would you even get a pregnancy test? I was like, I'm going to just take it and see. I mean, it ain't nothing. We done took pregnancy tests before. He was using the restroom, and then I had went to get a shower. But before I took my shower, I said, let me go on and take this test, and then I'm going to get in the shower. By the time I get out, I will see what it say, and I won't even tell him I took it.
Yeah.
I took the test, and as I was getting ready to go get in the shower, I saw that it had the two lines on it that said positive, and I'm like, no way. So I'm like, no way. So then I went and I said, baby. And then so I came to him and I gave him the test. And he said, no, you playing. And then he started crying a little bit, like he had a little tear in his ear, yeah, in his eyes. And so I started crying too. And he was like, take another one, take another one. So I went on and took the next one, and that one was positive too. So I was like, I guess we pregnant for real. And it was just unreal.
Was it emotional for you?
It was very emotional because it was just like everything that I've always wanted.
Yeah.
Finally, God is letting me be a mommy. You know what I mean? Like, this is all I've ever wanted, was to be a mommy. And yeah, now I finally get a chance to be a mommy, not auntie, not godmom, mommy. It was a really special moment for us.
You took the two pregnancy tests. They both said positive. Mm-hmm. How soon after did you go to the hospital or go to see the doctor?
I called the doctor that same day.
Okay.
And they let me get in. I think it was by the end of that week. And I went to the doctor by that Friday. So it was quick.
Okay.
I think they said I was 7 weeks.
Wow.
When I went to the doctor.
And everything was good. They gave the baby a good bill of health,
yes,
and all of that.
Everything was great. I found out it was a boy. Since I have lupus, they wanted to do all kinds of tests to make sure that nothing was wrong with the baby or me, or that it would, you know, I could sustain the pregnancy. He was fine. He didn't have any issues. And it was a perfect pregnancy. I had no issues at all with him. It was perfect. No issues. My skin was beautiful. My hair was beautiful. I felt cute. It was amazing with him.
On the day that he was born, what did that feel like? Because you had been trying for so long. You went to doctors. You did all of these things. And now your baby is in your arms and you're holding them. What did that feel like?
It was just like a culmination of finally meeting the person that been kicking me this whole time. Finally, you know, just being able to see the look in my husband's eyes when he held him for the first time, and just being a mom, it's nothing like it. Like, because before we were getting pregnant, we would get dogs and we would get things to try to fill that void.
Yeah.
But it's just not a feeling like being a mom. It's somebody that's just, that God helped you create. He was just perfect. It was almost like being on cloud, not like a high.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Okay. So you had your first baby. Everything's great with the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Did you decide to have another child? Did you have a conversation?
I was nursing because I nursed both of my children.
Okay.
So I nursed DJ till he was 15 months. And then once he got 15 months, I told my husband, I said, well, I think I'm about ready to have another baby. I said, I want to do it by the time he's two so they can grow up together.
Okay.
So DJ was 15 months when I stopped nursing, and I found out I was pregnant with Denari when he was 18 months, because I was just feeling odd. I was just feeling not myself. My skin was acting crazy. It was just a lot. And I just was like, something's up.
You decided that you wanted to have another baby. Did you take any medicines or do anything special to get pregnant this second time, or was it just natural?
It was just natural this time. Okay. And I was actually shocked that it happened so fast. I didn't think it would be like a couple months from me deciding to stop nursing my son. And once I stopped nursing him, my cycle was regular. And I think that I started ovulating regularly again.
Okay.
And so then I got pregnant with my daughter, and it happened naturally. Okay. It just happened regularly. Like, I guess if I wasn't struggling with infertility for all those years, how they say it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
I guess that's how it happened.
God said it was time.
Yeah, God said it was time, definitely.
Yeah.
And people would always tell me the timing of God, and I would be like, oh, it would make me mad because I'm like, I'm married, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. Why are they talking about the timing of God when it's prostitutes out here getting pregnant? They not saved.
Yeah.
They don't care nothing about God. So why is the point that I can't get pregnant and all these women, crackheads, all of them, they out here having babies and I can't?
Yeah. I think we forget that we all have an individual relationship with God. And what God has ordained for our life is ordained for our life. And what's ours is ours. And it doesn't matter what everyone else has, because he's going to give what he's going to give to us in our time for the reasons that are necessary. And it's hard to see that when you're in it, but that's what's so awesome about God, you know? But anyway, you know, I can get to preaching, but... You found out you were pregnant with your second child. Were you apprehensive or scared at all because this is your second child? Or did you feel like everything would be fine?
Well, with her, I was more scared. And the reason why is because she did a toll on my body.
Okay.
DJ, I had no issues at all with my lupus. I had no issues with anything. It was just like almost like a... like it was just God put me on this little pedestal, like, you're a mommy and I'm going to protect you and it's nothing going to happen to you. You're not going to be sick. I didn't even have morning sickness with DJ. I didn't have stretch marks. It was just perfect. Everything about the pregnancy with DJ was perfect.
Now, DJ is your son, right?
DJ is my son, yes. Okay. And Denari is my daughter.
Okay.
So I just assumed that my pregnancy with Denari would be just like DJ. Because I mean, I'm the same woman having the same man's child. I know it's going to be the same.
Yeah.
No, it was completely different.
How was it different?
My hair fell out. So I had bald spots all over. I couldn't even do the weaves because I didn't have hair to put the weave on. I had to do wigs.
So at what point did these things start happening in your pregnancy?
It started as soon as she was conceived.
Mm.
It was crazy. It was night and day. The pregnancy differences between her and DJ was night and day. It was completely different. Like, I didn't think that one woman could be this vastly different in pregnancy. But my mom and my sisters and everybody always told me that had other children, they were like, every pregnancy is different.
Yeah.
So don't expect that it's all going to be the same, because everyone is different. Just like your children have different personalities, your pregnancies are different. The first things that started happening with Denari, they told me that she was possibly going to have a genetic issue. It was called Turner syndrome. And basically what that meant is that during the process of me getting pregnant, my body and my husband's body deciding what her sex would be, one of the X chromosomes fell off. So she would only have one X chromosome instead of two.
Mm.
And they said that basically they didn't mean that she wasn't going to have any physical things that look different. They said only thing is she wasn't going to be able to have children. She would have to do like growth hormones or something. They said I had to do for her to make sure that she could get to a standard height, to make sure that she could get to like her period would come on, yeah, things like that. Because they said that monochromy X would basically make her be infertile, short. But it wasn't anything like Down syndrome or something like that, but it was still a genetic issue.
How did you feel how did you and your husband feel when you heard that news?
I felt they were lying to me. I felt like God didn't let me wait this long to have children for something to be wrong with my babies. And I just started declaring over it right then and there that nothing was going to be wrong with her. She was going to be perfectly fine. And I wasn't going to have any issues. But I was saying it out of my mind. But in my heart, I still had some fear that something may be wrong with her. So it kind of gave me, I was kind of depressed during the pregnancy with her, along with the fact that I had all these body changes that were going on too.
You mentioned that your hair fell out. What other body changes were you experiencing?
My hair fell out. Some of my teeth were chipping like in the front. I was depressed because of my teeth. And then my body just started breaking out all over in red hives. I didn't know what it was. I went to the dermatologist while I was pregnant, and they thought that it was something called pregnancy-induced psoriasis. If I took a shower or a bath, it basically felt like somebody was pouring acid on my skin.
Wow.
If I tried to touch or hug my son, it would be excruciating. If anybody touched me, it would be excruciating. So basically, I just had on long sleeves all the time. It was just bad. It was just horrible. Up until the point I had her, I had scabs and sores all over my body until the day she was born.
I've heard of women becoming depressed because they gain weight during their pregnancy. But when the reflection in the mirror doesn't look like you're used to it looking, that can also have an effect on you. How are you mentally?
Mentally, I'm recovering. I could say that.
Still to this day?
To this day, I'm still recovering mentally because I've never had an issue with vanity. Even when I was heavier, when I was losing my hair, things like that, I never had an issue with vanity. I was always a pretty girl. Yeah. I never had an issue feeling pretty. I never had an issue attracting the opposite sex. I never had an issue with any of that.
Yeah.
So for the first time in my life, it was like, who is this person? Like, I've never had an issue feeling beautiful.
Yeah.
Because it's a mindset. So now I call myself spectacularly speckled. It almost looks like a leopard print pattern all over my skin. And it's white. It looks like vitiligo, but it's lupus because it was caused by lupus. So I have vitiligo caused by lupus.
To this day, you have that.
I still have it today.
And that's irreversible?
They said that it could possibly come back.
Your daughter, when she was born, Denari, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was she fine when she was born?
Yeah, she had nothing was wrong at all.
Okay.
Everything was fine. They did all the blood work. Everything was perfectly fine with her.
Praise God.
Nothing was wrong at all. The only issues was with me, and I'll take it all day. God could put everything he wants on me to make sure that my babies are healthy.
Why do you think that you didn't get pregnant? Do you think that it was anything that you guys were doing as far as stress or anything? Do you think that played a part in it, or why? Why do you think you hadn't gotten pregnant?
Looking back at it now.
Yeah.
I don't think it was our time because, like you said, everything is in the perfect timing of God. Because
yes.
Back then, we weren't as stable as we were when we got pregnant with DJ. So just being able to be home with them like that on a regular basis and actually raising them myself, not putting them in daycare and stuff like that, I wouldn't have been able to do that had we had them earlier in our relationship.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have had a stable home like we do now earlier in our relationship. We would be praying amongst ourselves when we wanted children. God, please let it be the perfect circumstances when we have our children. We don't want them to suffer. We want to make sure that we're able to provide a stable family life, a stable income, stable everything for them. That would be our prayer when we would be praying to get pregnant. But then we would get mad when we didn't get pregnant. But obviously it wasn't the time because we weren't what we were praying for.
Yeah. You went through a big transformation,
mm-hmm.
and we talk about everything that you went through. What effect did it have on your husband? You're his wife.
Mm-hmm.
You're his person.
Mm-hmm.
How did it affect him seeing you go through this and he couldn't really do anything to help you?
He thinks I'm beautiful regardless. Even when I'm thinking that I'm looking raggedy, he's like, baby, you're beautiful.
Was it worth it?
I believe it was. I'll do it all over again. I would 100% do it again. Because if it was her and me, I would choose her all the time.
Yeah.
Because if it would have been that my skin would have been beautiful and she would have had Turner syndrome, I would choose my skin to look like this.
Yeah. Are you done?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
There's a lot of women that are not able to have children. They've been mm-hmm. told so many different things, so many different reasons. And you made some adjustments and you were able to get pregnant. What would you say mm-hmm. to the women who are listening, who are or have been in your situation, who want to get pregnant, who are discouraged, who are depressed? Is there anything that you will say to them or can say to them?
What I would mainly say is that you're not alone and don't give up. I know sometimes it might seem like it's bleak and it seems like it's never going to happen for you, but God hears your prayers and he does understand your plea and he will answer your prayers. It may not be when you expect it or when you think it should happen, but I truly believe that God will give you the desires of your heart. If you need to talk to somebody, please talk to somebody because you're not alone and you're not the only person that's out there going through this. But talk about it and don't blame yourself either, because we think we're inadequate or we're broken, and it's not us. It is a medical condition. Medical conditions are not you as a person. It doesn't make you less or inadequate or anything. It's a medical condition and it can be treated. And that's what I want to let people know. Don't internalize and put all that on you because it can break you.
Amen. After you had your daughter, did your symptoms subside or are they still there as far as like the pain and different things that you were experiencing?
I'm going to have lupus for the rest of my life. And I never have a day where I'm 100% no pain. Like, okay. I'll say for the most part, I've been dealing with it since 2007, even before I had children. So most of the time I'm operating at like a, I'm probably operating at like a 7.5 to 8. Some days I might be a 5. I push through it because I know that my children depend on me. I know my husband depend on me, and I'm home with them right now. Even on days where I'm not feeling good, I know I got to take care of my babies. They require me to take care of them. As far as my skin goes, it's not as bad as it was.
Yeah.
I have not had a no breakout since she's been born. It's always a patch somewhere. So she kind of like activated my lupus. DJ was dormant. I just found out what I actually have is not, it's not psoriasis. It's discoid lupus.
Wow. So knowing that you had lupus, because you said you found out in 2007, did you and your husband ever say or think about, you know, not having kids, but just adopting?
I wasn't against adopting, but my husband was saying that he wanted to at least try to have his own children. And if we couldn't, then he would adopt, or he would just take care of his nieces and nephews as if they were his. Because my husband always wanted a desire to have his own children. I didn't have an issue with adopting. But okay. Of course, you know, when you're married, it's both of y'all together. So you had to make a collective decision. But he's supportive mostly of everything I do.
Okay. Is there anything you want to say to your husband? Because it seems like he was there for you. And hopefully he listens to this. But is there anything you would like to say to him?
Well, baby, D, you know that I love you. And I thank you for always putting up with all my crazy. I know I could be crazy sometimes. And for just supporting me and being there for me and our babies. And just loving me when I don't even love myself sometimes. And just giving me the support that I need when I need it. And sometimes when I don't want it, you still are there to support me. And I love and I thank you for that.
Well, I love and I thank you, Juana, for sharing your story and for being strong. It's so many people dealing with this particular situation. And I thank you for sharing your story, being so vulnerable and honest, because I believe it will help so many women. So thank you so much. I truly appreciate it. And God bless you. And hug your kids for me.
Oh, thank you. I will.
All right. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
To educate us on fertility issues and fertility options, I spoke with board-certified reproductive endocrinologist, Dr. Serena Chen. Dr. Serena Chen, thank you for coming to the show.
Amir, I'm really honored to be here. I'm very excited to be talking about my favorite topics.
How many people are dealing with fertility issues, would you say?
The standard estimate is 15% of couples, which is like 6 or 7 million people. I believe it could be higher. And also there's populations that are not necessarily struggling with infertility right now, but have fertility concerns, like people who maybe don't have a partner yet, but are worried about having a baby at some point and worried about how getting older might impact that. And people who are single, and the LGBT population also has challenges conceiving. So we help all of those people. Cancer patients, maybe with chemotherapy, radiation, that can affect your eggs and sperm. So a lot of people need to think about fertility. So what your young lady went through is actually super common. So at least several million people, if not many more than that.
Wow. And what kind of doctor are you, Dr. Chen?
So I am called a reproductive endocrinologist, which means I'm board certified in obstetrics and gynecology. I subspecialize in reproductive endocrinology and infertility. So that means I did the OBGYN residency, and then I did a fellowship training. So I'm board certified in that as well. I work on helping people optimize conception, help them conceive. We do things like IUI and IVF, in vitro fertilization, egg freezing, and those types of things, and then help people conceive, and then watch the early pregnancy until you're at the point where you see the heartbeat a couple of times and things look good. And then we hand you off to the obstetrician, who will then take you through the rest of the pregnancy and actually do the delivery.
Okay. So would you say when people come to you, are they sad? Are they hopeful? Are they positive? Or are they defeated?
They are all of those things, Amir. Mm. But the prevalence of anxiety and depression is much higher in the infertility population, because infertility produces a level of stress that is, on a quantitative scale, the same as the level of stress of someone who has a cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And yet people with infertility do not get the empathy and support from society that cancer patients get. Yeah. Cancer patients certainly deserve a lot of support and empathy, but infertility patients do. But on the outside, they all look fine, and people say things they think might be helpful, but are basically dismissive, you know, and meanwhile, these people are really, really suffering, and you see higher rates of divorce, all kinds of issues. So it is extremely stressful, which makes sense, because if you think about it, it's not life and death, but it is life and death. Because, yeah, you know, if you don't reproduce, that's the end of the human race. And so it's a powerful human drive for many people to, you know, have a family. Not for everybody, but it is for a lot of people, a very powerful drive. So if you're struggling and things are not happening and you don't know what's going on, then you can become very stressed and feel hopeless and lost. And also there's a lot of shame and stigma because it's something that you're told should just happen super easily. Like, you know, your whole teenage years, people are telling you how not to get pregnant. And, you know, and here now you've been trying your whole life not to get pregnant. And now here we are, it's time to get pregnant and it's not happening the way it's supposed to. And it's not exactly something that you talk about casually with just anybody. It's not something that is easy to talk about.
Yeah. And I know a lot of women feel inadequate.
Yes.
And they can't reproduce in the normal way.
And men also, in a different way, you know, men obviously experience this differently, but both men and women are suffering.
Yeah. When people come to you, what's the main reason that they're having problems?
So the good news is, if you let me use all my tools, I can help anybody have a baby. Now, some people maybe shouldn't have a baby, you know, like if you're 90 years old, maybe that's not like a good idea.
Yeah.
But the technology can produce a baby for anybody. Some people will need really aggressive, high-tech things like donor egg and donor sperm that may not be acceptable to a lot of people. So just because I can do it doesn't necessarily mean you want me to do that. But the technology is such that if you stick with it and you use all the tools, you will eventually have a baby. The bad news is usually I cannot answer the question, why? Why is this happening to me? Yeah. Why am I not getting pregnant? What is wrong? That part is often much harder. We sometimes say, well, the ovaries are not as good as they could be. The sperm is not as good as it could be. But, you know, it only takes one egg. It only takes one sperm. And we don't have a lot of good answers there because that's not where our science is. We're getting there. We're learning more now. But that's still a black box because so often we can say whether you're healthy or not healthy, how to optimize your health, how to prepare best for a healthy pregnancy, and then we can get you to the pregnancy safely. But we often will not be able to answer the question, why is this happening to me? So that can be frustrating.
Yeah. Isn't that certain things that people are doing that are causing some fertility issues?
You want to optimize things. Like a lot of people, you know, worry about stress. And it's not good to be really stressed out, but it doesn't actually really cause infertility. It's more the reverse. Infertility causes stress. And then if you're all stressed out because of infertility and you don't get the right treatment or you're depressed and you're not feeling well, then maybe the treatments will not work as well if you're not mentally healthy. The same thing with physical health. If you are not physically healthy, that does make things harder. So, you know, we like our patients to eat a lot of vegetables, to get good sleep, to get regular exercise, drink a lot of water, take your vitamins. And, you know, if there's specific issues, like you have a thyroid issue, you have sugar diabetes, you have a lot of extra weight, you have other medical conditions, we want to optimize those things.
Usually when this conversation is had or when I've heard it, it's always usually the woman, right? we spoke about this earlier when you said men too, right? And a lot of women put themselves through a lot of stress and feeling inadequate because they think that they can't produce and they think that they're the reason. How often is it the man?
About half the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Men and women tend to look at things a little bit differently. And, you know, guys don't go to the doctor.
No, we don't.
Right? And women go to the doctor on a regular basis because whether you're trying to get pregnant or not, you know, you're going, you know, for your pap smears and your just your regular checkups. Whereas guys, I feel like kind of have to be almost dying in order to see a doctor, you know. Yeah. But I want all my guys to be proactive about their reproductive health. I would like them to see a primary care doctor and tell the doctor, listen, I'm working on being a dad. I want to be as healthy as I can be. Do the testing. Let me optimize my health as much as I can. You got to quit smoking, not so much beer, not so much sitting on the couch. We all know what to do, right? But I think we got to up our game a little bit when we're talking about trying to have a family.
When a couple comes to you and they say we're having infertility issues, what do you say to them?
I say, I'm so glad you're here and let's go through your past history. And these are some helpful things you can do right away. Let's figure out what I think is going on.
Yeah.
And even if everything looks perfectly normal, I want to do a thorough evaluation. So we check the uterus and make sure the tubes are open. We check the woman's hormone levels. And I also do a lot of just general health testing in preparation for pregnancy.
Yeah.
And then for the guys, I say, go to the primary care and see a good doctor, but let me check your sperm. And then I do genetic testing on both partners because we have some amazing technology now that can dramatically reduce the risk of having a child with a severe genetic disease. Infertility obviously is really difficult and does cost an enormous amount of stress, but it's also in some ways a real opportunity to really have a healthy pregnancy. You know, most pregnancies are not monitored by a doctor until you're like 10 weeks pregnant. This is our chance to just say, you know, let's do everything right.
So if a couple is having fertility issues, what do you suggest that they do first?
So I think the first thing is for the woman to talk to her OBGYN. You know, you don't want to go randomly to see Dr. Google. I know most of us go to Dr. Google first, but Dr. Google didn't go to medical school. So Dr. Google doesn't always give the best advice.
Yeah.
Resolve.org is a wonderful national organization with lots of local chapters and a lot of good information and support online, on social media, by phone, where they can say, hey, that sounds like, go talk to your OBGYN, or maybe it's time to see a specialist. Here's some good specialists in your area. ASRM.org, American Society for Reproductive Medicine, is our national medical society. And there's a whole bunch of information on the patient website that, you know, answers a lot of questions. And, you know, so you can say, well, when is it time to see a doctor? When is it time to see a specialist? What are some of the treatments available? What are some of the things I need to be concerned about? What are some of the things that could affect my fertility? You know, I think a lot of good information is there. And there's also a listing of physicians who are ASRM members that can really help you understand what's going on and how to take the next step. It's usually nothing is really terribly wrong. It's just you need a little help and advice, and then we can provide a lot of reassurance and help you get pregnant.
I heard you say that you could help almost anyone who wanted a child have a child. I know one of those options is IVF. For the people who are considering IVF or any other option, but starting with IVF, what is that process like and what's the usual cost?
It's different in every area of the country. And for some reason, the United States, unlike the rest of the developed world, treats reproductive medicine like it's elective plastic surgery instead of, you know, family building being one of the most important life activities. So that is really a struggle. It could be thousands and thousands of dollars. It could potentially be very expensive.
Okay.
So it is definitely something where it's important to be informed and educated. and to advocate for yourself and to understand your options. The part that is upsetting is that a lot of the treatments that are not covered are actually the safest and most cost effective. Like a lot of times IVF is not covered, but IUI is. And yet IVF, because it's 10 times more effective, is actually least costly fertility treatment in terms of having a baby, because it's so much more successful. But it does require like an upfront expense if you're paying out of pocket. So IUIs then seem cheaper, but you know, they might not work as well.
The IVF process, what does that look like when a couple decides that they want to do it?
You are getting a full evaluation, and then you are taking 6 to 10 days of 2 to 3 injections a day at home. So you learn how to do the injections. They're little tiny needles that go just under the skin. You do have to get blood work and ultrasound every day, every other day for a week to 10 days, because we want to really monitor you closely.
Yeah.
And then for the egg retrieval, usually you get an IV, you go to sleep, and 10 minutes, we put a small needle in the vagina under ultrasound guidance, we pull out the egg. So it's an invasive procedure, but it's minimally invasive, you know, ultrasound guided needle procedure. It's not a surgery, and it does usually just take 10 minutes. So we pull out the eggs, we put the eggs and the sperm together, grow the embryos, and then sometimes we freeze them and test them. Sometimes we just put them in right away. Everybody's a little bit different. It depends on your situation. The embryo transfer is done while you're awake. That's more like a pap smear. So that's maybe a little bit crampy, but should not be uncomfortable.
Got it. And so what's the difference between the IVF and the IUI?
So IVF stands for in vitro fertilization.
Yes.
And IUI stands for intrauterine insemination. Intrauterine insemination is in vivo fertilization. So that's where fertilization takes place inside the fallopian tube, where it normally is supposed to take place. But in vitro fertilization means we're doing the fertilization in the lab, in the IVF lab, outside the body.
So what about when the woman is functioning properly and she is dropping eggs and everything fine, but the issue is either in sperm count with the man or something with the man? What options do you do for in situations like that?
With the man, interestingly, severe male factor issues, sometimes IUI helps. And sometimes surgery helps, and sometimes medication helps. So sometimes we send them to the urologist, but for most of the time, IVF is actually the best treatment for male factor infertility, because we have something called ICSI, intracytoplasmic sperm injection. So we can actually just inject the sperm into the egg. That's a procedure that was invented in the 1990s and actually solves like almost 99% of all male factor fertility issues. It's extremely effective.
Awesome. Well, I thank you so much, Dr. Chin. I have one last question for you because I know you have to go. You're extremely busy. And again, thank you for taking time to speak to us about this, because I think it's extremely important. But for the couples that are listening to this, and I say couples because men...
Yes, Amir, I think we have a message for them. I think it's really important to get informed. And I think I would like to leave everybody with a message of hope, you know, because I do feel like if you become informed and really understand all your options, most people will find a way, because these treatments can be very successful. And I don't think people really know that. I think people feel like, a lot of people feel hopeless, and then they don't get information or hope. So I'm so glad you're talking about this.
Thank you so much. I just think it's very important. But for the young man and the young woman that are listening right now and who are apprehensive, who are afraid, who are whatever, or who are hopeless, what would you say to them?
I would say there are a lot of reasons to have hope. There are a lot of options. And I think if you become informed about your own health and your own body and get help from your doctor, I do think we can find a way. The technology really does work. And I understand that insurance can be a barrier and money can be a barrier, but we can try to find solutions. If you don't reach out, then then we can't connect you with those resources. But there are a lot of people across the country that understand those barriers well and are working to try to overcome them.
Awesome. Any last words?
People need to eat more veggies.
So everyone should be vegan?
Well, not vegan, but just get more veggies in your diet.
Yeah.
I'm not personally vegan, and I don't think I could be. I still eat red meat every once in a while because I do like a good steak, but getting a lot of veggies in your diet, a little bit of fresh fruits is good. And then sleep is very, very important. And exercise is important too, but actually, you know, I would say if you have to choose, hopefully you never have to do this, but every once in a while I have to choose between getting adequate sleep and exercise. Actually, sleep would be more of a little bit more of a priority, but hopefully you can do both.
So why is sleep so much so important? Because, you know, I struggle with sometimes just getting 4 to 6 hours sometimes. So why is sleep so important?
It affects every single cell in your body. You know, a lot of people when they're trying to lose weight and get healthy, they really emphasize the exercise and diet. But if you're not getting adequate good sleep, it raises your inflammation in your body, it increases insulin resistance. That actually changes your metabolism. So even if you're eating a healthy diet, you're not metabolizing it as well as somebody who's getting good sleep. So you're kind of taking 2 steps forward and then taking 2 steps backwards.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chen. You have been amazing. And I can't wait to speak to you again. I hope that you, a lot of people that are listening to this, will hear you and listen to you and not suffer in silence, but actually do something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Please reach out. Please reach out.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
To all the women, men, and couples who are experiencing fertility issues, please don't give up. Don't give up hope and keep the faith. Consult a doctor and discuss your options. I'll be praying for each and every one of you. God bless you all. That's our show for today. The music used during the interview of this episode was produced by The Fifth Perspective. Thank you for listening to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. We truly appreciate your support. Our show is produced by Amir Ali. Our theme song was written by Amir Ali, produced by Adrian Brundy, and performed by Enrico Dells. If you would like to be a guest on our show, or if you have a question or you want to provide some feedback, send an email to WYTLTpodcast@gmail.com. Our podcast is available on all platforms, so make sure you subscribe to our show and follow us on social media. Be well, be safe, and be blessed. Until next time.